Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Welcome to the St. Louis Death House. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
It's warm. Balmy, even. That might be my heater, which is an external heater. It's not my home heater. I don't have a heater.
It's cold for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
But it's warm here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have central heat, let's be honest. Yeah. So it's...
You know what I was thinking? Yeah. I was going to thinking about... I was wondering, because tax season's coming up, can I claim my two space heaters as dependents? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can write them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a two down in the tax.
They're form. Also my two closest friends right
wow.
now. Yeah.
It's weird because they're like so hot and cold.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
God, I'm sorry. Yeah,
okay.
Oh, Jesus.
Well.
Anyway, I was saying that because I experienced snow this weekend, which I haven't in a really long time because I'm from Wisconsin and I don't often go back when it's super cold. But I was in St. Louis last weekend visiting two of my closest college friends. And it was snowing. It was beautiful. And I was like, I could do this. And then, of course, 15 minutes later, I was like, get me out of this white hellhole.
Yeah.
You know? And so, anyway.
What was the trip about?
To visit them. They have small children now.
Okay.
So I went and I hugged their kids and I kissed their kids. And the kids struggled to get away from me. And then we did other stuff, like go see cool St. Louis history things, like the episode today, the Lemp Mansion.
Yeah, you posted about it, so we got very intrigued.
Yeah, I had no idea. I visited there a bunch of times to visit my friends, but one of my friends was like, we have to go here. You have this. I feel like when the podcast has been happening, people are more now able to, they want to give us things to see and do,
yeah,
more so than before. Even though, before I was just like a creepy weirdo, now I'm a creepy weirdo with a podcast.
So there's some structure to your weirdness. So mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you need to. It's like when your parents like, oh, I got something for your comedy bit.
Yeah.
Here's something you should do for your comedy.
Yeah. Now they only exclusively pitch things we should cover.
Yeah.
Which are, I'm like, they're not haunted. They're not abandoned. They don't have any history. It's like a garage. I don't, it's like there's a car in there.
Yeah.
There's no history to that. Yeah. So it was very fun. It was very cold. A lot of children running around. One of my friends started her own distillery, though, which is very cool, called Arcana Brewing.
Oh, old-timey.
Right?
And that ties into this episode, right?
It does, because St. Louis is a big brewer's town, as much as Milwaukee is where I'm from, because there are these underground caves all over, and the caves are the perfect temperature for lager. So people would brew in these caves all over Missouri and get this perfect beer, this German lager. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, we have done some guesting on some podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Want to get that out there?
Yeah.
I was on one called Dark Five, which my friend Rachel Evans does. She's part of like the Snarled World, great podcast and shows. And we talk about five episodes we did on Ghost Town in mm-hmm. that was surrounded by Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So we talked about that. So make sure to check out Dark Five. She has some great guests. She had the dude from Last Podcast on the Left on mm-hmm. as a recent episode. But I'm on there. We're talking about Ghost Town. So check that out. She's great. And then we also did another podcast.
Yeah, we did. Everything Reviewed.
Everything Reviewed, yeah.
Everything was reviewed-ish.
Yeah.
Adjacent review.
That was super fun.
Yeah.
We covered a lot of stuff, a lot of ghostly stuff.
We did. We covered a lot of territory about our lives, about the art form of stand-up, about improv, about L.A. If you want to get to know us or get to know these guys,
yeah,
please check it out. It was very fun.
Yeah, so Dark Five and Everything Reviewed, we highly recommend both of them. Absolutely. But don't stop listening to this episode.
Please don't. And in fact, this episode, I forgot to mention to Jason before we started recording this, I have some audio interview. Why don't we listen to it right now?
Ooh.
Let's do it.
Like 1 to 4.
Oh, yeah, how she said one of those lights had turned on their own.
Yeah, whoa. In the nursery?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, when I, a few years back, you ladies are free to look upstairs if you want to. Also, we decided to use the front stairs. In the upstairs room right above us, it's known as Charles Room. It's kind of like a room where the B&Bs kind of gather. We actually had some guests about 4 years ago. They were staying in the room, staying the night in there, and they had woken up at about 3 a.m. to hearing the piano in the room playing on its own.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. So
it's like in the middle of the night.
In the night. So you guys are okay. It's working hours.
You guys have never experienced anything
while I've had subtle things, kind of. Like, I swear I have my name being called when I'm setting up in the morning. I swear. Ugh. Like, our waiters are waiters, they'll wear suit jackets. Like, I thought I'd seen one of them one morning when I was setting up. I had the glass candle holder right there on that mantle one night during dinner when we were cleaning up at around 10:30, 11. Came crashing down in the middle of the floor and broke.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of get a few things here.
That's
and there.
A few things, yeah.
That's, it's not nothing.
Yeah, at first you kind of.
Fairly new.
Yeah, at first you're kind of scared of it, but I've been working here now for about 3 years-ish. I'm kind of used to it. You just kind of walk by and keep going.
Oh, how about that, huh?
I like that.
Yeah, so we went there for lunch, and I talked to some people there. And they experience hauntings a lot if they're there late. Like, you got to be there late, many hauntings. But it's interesting, you know, like, that's your reality if you are wait staff or staff at this bed and breakfast. That's what the Lemon Mansion is now. It's not technically abandoned. It's a bed and breakfast. In fact, my friend who told me about it, she was a part of a St. Louis history class in high school. And if you stayed overnight in the Lemon Mansion, you got an automatic A.
Oh, wow.
That's
like a really good idea for like a movie. You know what I mean? Like
yeah. It's a good premise.
Like, can you...
She didn't do it, though.
She wanted to work for the A?
Yeah, she wanted to work for the A. I would have done it. I would have done it twice.
Yeah.
2 A's? Can I get a super A?
I would have done it if you gave me an F.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's very... It is very, very creepy. And we'll talk about it as we go through some of the history. Yeah. My experiences. We have a lot of pictures we're going to put up. But the Lent Mansion, it's said to be one of the 10 most haunted places in America. It's in St. Louis, Missouri, and hosts the tragic Lemp family. Over the years, the mansion was transformed from the stately home of millionaires to office space to a rundown boarding house, finally restored back to its current-ish state as a dinner theater, a restaurant, and bed and breakfast. And dinner theater, I can't endorse, per se, but the meatloaf was very good.
Was that their specialty?
No, it was just something I wanted.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You don't order meatloaf a lot?
I mean, if they said it was, if they said it was like, oh, we're known for a meatloaf, any place when they say we're known for this, I'll usually get that because who am I not to do that?
Yeah. But then I don't like when they're like, the most popular thing is this. And you're like, that's not what I asked.
Yeah.
But it was delicious. It was great. And you're sitting this beautifully, managed, picturesque kind of dining hall with other people and other people who are staying there too. But the Lemp family, very interesting. So they began with Johann Adam Lemp, who arrived in St. Louis from Eskwege, Germany in 1838. He built a small grocery store and he sold common items. But the most popular item was their lager and suddenly became really famous. It was handed down by his father, the recipe. And it was so popular just 2 years later that he gave up grocery store and built a small brewery in 1840 at a point close to where the Arch is today. So got right into it. Lemp first sold beer in a pub attached to the brewery, introducing St. Louis to its first lager. Before long, Lemp found that the brewery was too small to handle both production and storage and found a limestone cave. They were all limestone caves south of the city limits. And the caves too still exist, and that cave specifically does. Lemp's Western Brewing Company continued to prosper and by the 1850s was one of the largest in the city. In 1858, the beer captured first place in the annual St. Louis Fair. A millionaire by the time of his death, Adam Lemp died on August 25th, 1862, and his son, William, expanded the brewery. He purchased a 5-block area around storage houses, around the house. Like, all of this stuff is really right there and still exists in a lot of different incarnations. A very old part of the city. By the 1870s, the Lemp family symbolized both wealth and power as the Lemp Brewery controlled the St. Louis beer market, a position it maintained until Prohibition. In 1868, Jacob Feichert, William Lemp's father-in-law, built a house a short distance from the brewery. In 1876, William Lemp purchased it for his family, utilizing it as both a residence and auxiliary house. It was so impressive, Lemp immediately began renovating and expanding it into this Victorian showplace that is now in the main house right now. And it, again, it looks very creepy. It's this white building. It's got the old Lemp signature on it. It's very, that's my cat on plastic. Can they hear that?
Oh, that wasn't, it wasn't Lemp haunting us?
That was Lemp.
Lemp,
L-E-M-P,
yeah.
Right? Like Lamp, but with an E. So in the midst of the success, the Lemp family experienced the first of many tragedies when Frederick Lemp, William Sr.'s favorite son and heir apparent, died in 1901 at the age of 28. Frederick, who had never been in very good health at all, died of heart failure. The devastated William Lemp was never the same, began a slow withdrawal. He was rarely seen in public after his son's death. On January 1st, 1904, William's closest friend, Frederick Pabst, also died, like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, okay. Right? Heard of it.
Leaving William indifferent to the details of running a brewery, he was totally checked out. Though he still arrived at the office each day, he was nervous and unsettled. His physical and mental health had begun to decline, and February 13th, 1904, he shot himself in the head with a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson. That's going to be a theme.
Oh, boy.
You excited?
Yeah.
Buckle up. So, in November 1904, William Lemp Jr. took over as the new president of the brewing company, inheriting the family business and a vast fortune. He and his wife Lillian began to spend the inheritance. They filled the house with servants. They spent huge amounts on carriages, clothing, and art. Now, Lillian was also really interesting. She was a beautiful woman who came from a wealthy family herself. She and William Lemp Jr. married in 1899, and William J. Lemp III was born on September 26, 1900. Before long, Lillian became known as the Lavender Lady, which is very creepy, because of her fondness for color. In addition to her lavender attire and accessories, she went so far as to have her carriage horses' harnesses dyed lavender. There's a lot of pictures of her in the mansion. It's just like long, flowing Victorian lavender dresses. There's a picture of her in the mansion. She's in lavender, and like, it is a very creepy picture. In the beginning, William enjoyed showing off his trophy wife, but he was also a player.
Uh-oh.
Born with a silver spoon in his mouth, he was used to doing and acting how he pleased. So, when William began to tire of his beautiful wife, he demanded that she spend her time shopping.
Listen, right?
I don't know. No. That doesn't sound so bad, right? Yeah. He allotted her $1,000 a day and gave her an ultimatum that if she didn't
That's like $800,000 for inflation.
Just like take your lavender carriage horses out and spend some money. Yeah. Not such a bad idea. So if she didn't spend it, she wouldn't get any more. So she had to spend $1,000 a day.
Do you know that's even in the movie Brewster's Millions, where it's a Richard Pryor. It's a thing where he has to spend X amount of money, and if he does, he gets this amount of money, or you can take the small amount of money. One of my favorite kind of 80s movies.
It's like this crazy Pryor's premise. Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds a little bit like that.
Yeah, but with lavender.
Oh, yeah, way more lavender.
More lavender. So in the meantime, Will was busy running the brewery during the day and pursuing all kind of activities during the night. He held lavish parties in the caves below the mansion. How cool would that be? Very cool. He would bring in numerous prostitutes for entertainment of his friends. He enjoyed the swimming pool, the bowling alley, the free-flowing beer. His friends who attended these events were, you know, just, they hung out, they partied. Like, what a life. I don't know, like, the wife, you know, you shop for the day and then the store's closed. She, like, hang out or like go to bed. I don't know.
What did she say? Sell $6 to spend. Like she's like, I can't come
she's
back.
She's like, yeah, somebody, what are you selling?
I wish we were, you know what they could have done? If we were there, she could have gone to patreon.com/ghosttownpod and contributed to our Patreon to get 2 bonus episodes a month.
Nice.
And other stuff. Nice, right?
Man, she's been so good at this and I'm so bad at this.
I'm good at marketing and I'm bad
at nothing.
Yeah. And I'm bad at the substance. That's it.
Substance?
Yeah, I'm bad.
No, not me.
Substance.
I'll stumble over pages of substance that I've copied from the internet. Okay. Thank you very much. Will's shenanigans caught up with him when he had a son with a woman other than his wife. Yikes. Today, there's no official documentation that the boy existed. However, rumors that the boy was hidden in the mansion attic for his entire lifetime have been prevalent over the years. And I went to that attic. It's also incredibly creepy and small, and there's no windows. Ugh. According to St. Louis historian Joe Gibbons, when he interviewed a former nanny and a chauffeur who worked in the mansion long ago, both of them verified that the boy did exist and was housed in the attic quarters that also had the servants' rooms, which are now places that you can actually stay. Spawned from Will's philandering with either some prostitute or servant or who knows, he was also born with Down syndrome. Also very sad. The family kept him in the attic, was ashamed of him, and they called him the monkey-faced boy. And the soul's supposed to haunt the Lent Mansion. You know what? I would, too, if I were him.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a very...
Pretty awful.
You know what? Let's take a little break. Tiny, quick little break after we process that and come right back in. Is that good?
Sure.
All right. All right. Let's get back into it.
You guys okay now?
I think we're good. Okay, yeah. We're good.
Listen, these people get their due. Yeah. All right. You ready for it? I'm ready for it. So William Jr. tired of his trophy wife and filed for divorce in 1908. Why she didn't make this step with all of the things happening, I don't know. So the court's proceedings surrounded the divorce became a huge St. Louis scandal, with four St. Louis newspapers devoting extensive front page coverage to the affair. The trial opened in February 1909 to crowds that flocked to the courthouse every day to witness the drama of the violence, drunkenness, and cruelty. Ignoring William's decadent activities, Lillian almost lost custody of William Lemp Jr., or William Lemp III. There's a lot of William Lemps happening. So this is, of the original guy, his grandson. Because a photograph that was presented at the trial showed her smoking a cigarette, Jason.
Oh, that's a gateway to...
Did they stone her? She almost lost her son.
Did they stone her? That's what they did, right?
Oh, no, she's going to die. Don't worry.
Great. Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah. In the end, she retained custody of their son, but soon retired from the public eye. The only time that she was ever seen wearing anything other than lavender was on her final day of her divorce proceedings, which she appeared entirely in black. Ooh, how cool is this, saga?
She's so cool.
She's like, I want to make a statement.
The theatrics are like...
Lavender? Yeah. The servant's like, ma'am, lavender? And she's like, not today.
Yeah.
Not today. So this was just the beginning of shit, y'all. In 1906, nine of the largest breweries in St. Louis had combined to form the Independent Brewers Company, creating a fierce competition from the Lemp Brewery. In the same year, William's mother died by cancer, April 16th. My reflex was to say she shot herself in the head, but that's not. She didn't. She died of cancer, and that's sad.
You're keeping your tragedy straight here.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. The brewery's fortunes were declining, and the Lent Mansion was entirely remodeled in 1911 and converted into offices for the brewery. At the same time, William allowed the company's equipment to deteriorate without any innovations, and by World War I, it was just limping along, kind of an embarrassment.
It was limping along.
Oh, my God.
I'm a stand-up comedian, everybody, and joke writer.
Woo! Coming in hot. William soon built a country home on the Merrimack River, and he retired there in 1915 and married a second wife, Ellie Lindbergh, who was the widowed daughter of the late St. Louis brewer Caspar Kohler. Kohler Brewer, I don't know. That's another big brewer name. So all the brewers, it was
incestuous.
Yeah, also very like royal families kind of a thing. You know,
a lot of bloodline.
Exactly. So Prohibition, 1919, the individual family members were already wealthy, so there wasn't an incentive to keep the brewery afloat. For a time, William III hoped that Congress would repeal Prohibition, but he finally just gave up and closed Lemp without notice. The workers learned of the closing when they came to work one day and found just the whole place locked up. Dicks! These people are monster people.
Yeah.
On March 20th, 1920, Elsa Lemp Wright, William's sister, the wealthiest heiress in St. Louis, shot herself just like her father had years before. She also shot herself in her bedroom. She apparently was involved in a rocky marriage. It wasn't good. So you can stay in her room, and you can stay in the first Lemp room, too. They're both in the mansion. So liquidating the assets of the plant and auctioning the buildings, William Jr. sold the famous Lemp Falstaff logo to another brewer for $29,000. Everything must go, you know? So it just became a fraction of its estimated worth of $7 million in the years before Prohibition, declining heavily. After the end of Lemp's brewing dynasty, William Jr. slipped into a depression. Acting much like his father, he became increasingly nervous and erratic, shunning public life. Well, playboy, can't do it forever. And often complaining of ill health. On December 29th, 1922, William shot himself in the heart with a .38 caliber revolver in the very same building that his father died 18 years before. And I'm talking about the same, it's in the same radius. It's so close. He took his life on the main level of the mansion, just inside the entrance to the left. You can stand there. At the time of his death, this room served as his office. He was interred in the family mausoleum in his crypt just above his sister, Elsa. This family,
There's no escape from it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. William's brothers, Charles and Edward, had long ago left the family business. So with William Jr. gone, it seemed that it was time to kind of call it quits, throw in the towel. Edwin had entered into a life of seclusion at his estate in Kirkwood, Missouri, which is not super far. Charles had never been involved in the brewery at all and was just a banker, just a normal banker with a normal life. No head shooting, no weird rituals.
Skipped over him, I guess.
Yeah. In 1943, yet another tragedy occurred when William Lemp III died of a heart attack at the age of 42. They're dropping like flies. So his brother eventually remodeled the mansion back into a residence and lived in the house along with two servants and the illegitimate child of his brother, William. So it's like, can you imagine that? Like, it's like one dude, two servants, and then like this child of your brother.
Yeah.
In this giant creepy house that many people have taken their life in.
Yeah, I imagine that's got to always kind of color your world, no matter how you're feeling.
Exactly. And like, who chooses that? Like, why don't we take that child to a school or a place with sunlight?
Yeah.
I don't know. Call me crazy. But Charles, too, became an odd figure as he grew older. He had a morbid fear of germs. His obsessive compulsive behavior included wearing gloves at all times to avoid bacteria, and he was constantly washing his hands. It was during that time that William's illegitimate child, now in his 30s, died at the mansion. He was buried in the Lemp Cemetery plot with only a small flat marker with the word Lemp on it. So shortly after his death, Charles became the fourth member of the Lemp family to commit suicide. First, he shot his beloved Doberman Pinscher in the basement of the mansion. He also never married. Like, it was just like him, his hand soap, and this dog. There's a lot of really sad pictures of them. Then, climbing the staircase to his room on the second floor, which you can also stay there, he shot himself. Charles was divorced on May 10th, 1949, by one of his staff. Discovered by one of his staff, still holding a .38 caliber revolver in his right hand. This is a sad episode. The dog was shot in the basement, but he, like, halfway went up the stairs. He was, like, trying to get back to his owner.
Oh. I mean, is there just, like, no escape from this?
Yeah. Of the Lemps, only Edwin Lemp, who had long avoided the life that had turned so tragic for the rest of his family, remained. He was known as a quiet, reclusive man who walked away from the Lemp Brewery in 1913 to live a regular, peaceful life outside of St. Louis. He passed away, get this, quietly, of natural causes in 1970. According to Edwin's last wishes, his butler burned all of the paintings that the Lemps had collected throughout their lives, as well as priceless Lemp family documents and artifacts. So there's still some Lemp stuff there, but like he was like, burn it all down.
It's like bad juju.
Yeah, I just like, get rid of it. We hate it. Like, this is not how I want to remember my family. So these things, they just, like, he just essentially took a bonfire to all of his family's things. Yeah. And this is a very, very wealthy family with lots of nice things. So the line died out with him and his family's resting place, and it's now in a cemetery outside of St. Louis. After the death of Charles Lemp, the mansion was sold and turned into a boarding house. The building began to deteriorate, and the haunting tales began. Residents complained of ghostly knocks and phantom footsteps being held throughout the house. As the story spread, tenants were hard to find the boarding house, and it continued to decline. People didn't want to go there. It was just like not a good situation. In 1975, the old mansion was saved when Dick Pointer and his family purchased it. They began to renovate the building, turning it into the Restaurant Inn and trying to restore it to its state back in the early 1900s. Workers within the house that you have heard talk about strange sounds, vanishing tools, being watched. A lot of people would leave the job. As you heard, the people were pretty like chill about it. But since the restaurant opened, there's several strange experiences. Apparitions appear and then quickly vanish. Voices and sound come from nowhere. Glasses often lift off the bar, flying through the air by themselves, which is, as you have heard. So lights, things like that. There's a piano in there that people have said to have heard people playing on. Who? Ghosts? I don't know. It's said to, of course, surprise, surprise, be haunted by several members of the Lemp family. But there are three areas of the mansion that have the most activity. The stairway, the attic, and what the staff refers to as the gates of hell in the basement. It's this area of the basement that used to be the entrance to the caves running below the mansion to the brewery and storage area. So the attic, as we said, is supposed to be haunted by William Jr.'s illegitimate son. So he is there. There's occurrences there. Ghost investigators have often left toys in the middle of the room, drawing a circle around them to see if the objects have been removed. Consistently, when they return the next day, the toys are found in another location. the women's restroom on the main floor, which is very weird. In fact, I took some video of it. They took this restroom from... Lem family like went to Paris one time and they were like, we're going to make a restroom that's like a Parisian restroom in our house. So there's a shower that's in the middle of the room. There's a toilet with like a stall and there's all these like bathing basins. Anyway, it was the personal domain of William Lem Jr. And that is also supposed to be very haunted. And so the freestanding shower, women have reported a man peeking over the stall. Maybe it was lecherous William Lem Jr. We don't know. One time a woman emerged from the bathroom returning to the bar and stated to the two men that she was there with, I hope you got an eyeful. However, the two men quickly denied ever having left the bar, for which the bartender verified. The ghost is said to be that of, again, womanizing William Lem Jr. And then in William Lem Sr.'s room, guests have often reported hearing someone running up the stairs and kicking at the door. When William killed himself, William Jr. was known to have run up the stairs to his father's room and finding it locked, began to kick the door in to get his father. Several years ago, a part-time tour guide reported hearing the sounds of horses outside of the room where William Lem Sr. had kept his office. However, when the tour guide looked through the window, nothing was there. The area north of the mansion is a parking lot, and it was used as a tethering lot for horses. So the Lemp Mansion is 3322 D. Menil, M-E-N-I-L Place, very close to the Mississippi, the mighty Mississippi.
Mississippi.
You can get there. You can dine there. You can stay there. And if you do, I'll give you an A.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Look at that callback.
Woohoo!
That comedy. You know, I wonder if in the same way these people are haunted, I wonder if the Lemps were also haunted by something or they felt something
mental
like that.
Mental illness?
I mean, sure. But also, did they, at least in their minds, also have like a sense of this? Or did they create the haunting?
Yeah.
Or is it part of, were they just victims of it as well?
Yeah. It's hard to know. I find this extremely fascinating, yeah. Especially when it's kind of dynastic. I think when it runs in families and there's like business involved and it's like crazy idiosyncrasies.
It's like how could every, like pretty, like almost no one survive?
Yeah.
I mean, no one did survive. I mean, is there, a, I mean.
No, the line died out.
The bloodline is over.
Yeah.
And even at that, like the chances of survival are very slim.
You will probably shoot yourself.
Shooting yourself in the heart is crazy.
I mean, just like what? And these people also like, they were huge in this community. Like they had everything, you know, like you think about people, it's like, oh, you know, people down on their luck or like whatever, or like trouble. But like this family, they were pretty close knit, a lot of success. And like, they just were unhappy, haunted. Yeah. I don't know.
Wow. That's, well, you know what? Here's the thing is, though, it's because beer is a gateway drug.
Oh.
So that's why maybe, Rebecca.
Yeah?
Did that stop you from drinking beer?
Yeah, but only, but not that.
Not that. Oh, no, no.
No, because I want that much martini instead.
Oh, okay. So you went for that.
Yeah,
for
I said no to beer.
Oh, okay.
So I can have a bucket of Everclear.
Oh, okay. So that's good. Well, we're going to put that video on the Instagram,
yeah.
Which is Ghost Town Pod. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll put pictures up. You'll see. You're going to see this house and you're going to want to go there.
Yeah.
And visit my friends and their babies.
And let's have this. Anyone who listens to this episode gets an A. How's that?
What?